right. I'd like to welcome you to the March 15th, 2024 meeting of the Arizona Barbering and Cosmetology Board. I'd like you to join me in the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you all. Your roll call.
For board members, we have Jerry Bagley.
Here.
Nick Whitman.
Present.
Trustee Guzman Glover.
Here.
Tracy Wilkinson.
Here.
Brandon McFadden.
Present.
Kate Charmantine.
Here.
And then an absent will know Marshall Knox and Brandy Flores. For staff members, we have Frank McGully.
Present.
Kelly Shepherd.
Present.
Rosa Rodriguez. Carlos Torazan.
Present.
Lakeisha Coleman.
Present.
Isabella Wadowski. And then Heather Santabria, myself. We have investigators, the silent board of Sportalon, present. Lisa Chavez, here. Keegan McConnell.
Here.
Alexander Hill.
Present.
Kathy Bergeron.
Present.
And then out front, we have Amelia Heredia. For legal counsel, we have Jean Galvin.
Here, thank you.
Perfect. All right, we'll move to the next part, which would be board business. First statement is the recognition that we may go into executive session if we need to discuss personal matters or to obtain legal counsel. A, discussion consideration possible action approval of regular board minutes for the January 19th, 2024 session. We have a motion regarding the January 19th meeting.
I move that we accept the minutes from the January 19th meeting.
Goodman, second. Motion is second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that passes unanimously. Discuss consideration possible action approval of confidential executive session meetings for the January 19th meeting. That goes around to you. Let's see if they look like what you remember. After a year, do we have a motion?
I move that we accept and approve the confidential executive session minute from January 19th.
Goodman, second. Motion is second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, passage unanimously. Next item, discuss consideration possible action on approval of regular board minutes for the February 16th, 2024 board meeting. John.
I love it here.
Yeah, five that were his.
So she can abstain and not count towards the vote.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, Frank, you said if you weren't in attendance, you just abstain and that counts towards the vote?
Correct.
Okay.
Okay, so do we have a motion to accept the minutes?
Yes, I move that we accept the minutes.
Second. First and second, all in favor, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
I'm abstaining.
I'm abstaining.
I would abstain too, I guess. I didn't attend much of it.
Good enough.
Yep.
All right, then that passes as unanimously as we can get. All right, next item up, B. Any conflicts of interest for any of the board members? Any reason we have a special today? No response. I would say that we have no conflicts of interest today. Now we're up to welcoming the barbering and cosmetology student instructor. You guys look suspiciously like. So where are you from and
Yeah, from Hunter County, of Courtney Beaman, of Dean Haley, and Yoko.
Where are you from?
I don't think.
I heard you guys are coming. Your management, called me and said, watch out for you guys.
Here we are.
All right, so we'll get the other part. All right, well, great. Thank you for coming. And you guys are student council member, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, very nicely done. Going into leadership. Very good. All right, well, we're looking for leaders, so we're glad you're here. Next item up, we're going to do the executive director's report.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. As always, I'd like to start with good news. Over the last month, we received two additional positive Google reviews, and our rating remains at 2.7. That continues to kind of be the only avenue we have for tracking customer service. Right now, we're looking at some options to launch a little later this year, both through our IVR call-in system, as well as potentially surveying licensees through other matters to try to start figuring out where we truly stand, but that's a work in progress. But again, getting the positive Google reviews is always a nice celebration in the office with our team. We have fully deployed that Facebook page. Last month I discussed, we had kind of soft launched and it is now officially fully deployed. We're doing 3 to 4 posts a week. We have over 1600 followers and our posts are reaching about 1200 people on those given days. I'll be very transparent. I was hesitant on doing social media in this world. We've got a lot of naysayers out there, but to this point, it's actually been very positive. And it's allowing us to proactively put information out there on our own behalf, not others putting it out on our behalf. From a staffing update, we did, my remote's not working. Hang on, I got it. From a staffing update, our licensing and customer care administrator, we have made an offer to two individuals who both ultimately declined. We had 6 additional interviews scheduled this last Tuesday. 4 of them showed up, and we have made an offer that we are waiting to hear back on. So hopefully, actually, I think we were expecting it this morning. So if we get it during the meeting, we will be sure to let you know. I am starting to process a little bit more that business and finance position. I'm leaning towards more of a business manager model than an administrator model, and doing that in conjunction with Central Services Bureau and seeing if that won't be the right direction for us to go. That said, I'm going to continue to hold just a little bit until the legislative session moves along a little bit further and we see what happens with a couple of the bills that I'm going to talk about in just a moment. Our February financial update, we had $410,504 in revenue and our expenses were $148,752. Our board fund began the year at $15,370,000 and we ended the month of February at $16,399,346. As I've said every month, we expect a higher board fund this year simply because this is a higher renewal year for us. Through February, which is 67% of the fiscal year, we are approximately 67% expended of our appropriation. That again, with the 2 leadership vacancies, we've made that switch now to being on quote unquote the positive side of that, but not surprised that it made that significant of a swing given the 2 vacancies. Our testing update for the month of February, we had 365 candidates test in the written practical format with an 83% average passing rate. You can see the breakdown of each of the testing types there. From a scheduled testing standpoint, we have 516 candidates that have a scheduled test date from March 4th all the way through December 30th. There's one person scheduled that continues to be one person scheduled all the way out to December 30th. Of that 516, 229 of those are the written practicals. 3 Cosmo, 2 Aesthetics, and 1 Nail Tech have registered for the Spanish written practical. Additionally, we have 287, the remaining is 287 registered for the theory test. I did receive an update late last week from NIC on our additional written practical request. It is officially think I've shared, it's officially approved. It's officially with the test development company for our hairstyling and instructor to transition to that written practical examination. Their tentative dates right now are mid-April for the test to be developed. And then there's an additional 4 weeks for the finalization of it with NIC to then be released to the testing provider. So in our case, that would be PCS and Prometric. Once it's provided to PCS and Prometric, there's going to be another 4 to 6 weeks of work that needs to be done to get those tests ready for that computer-based format at the testing centers. So we're looking at likely a July 1 launch of that, which I would look really had hoped we would be able to get through, you know, have it ready for April, May graduations, but it's just, it's not going to at this point. Our licensing update for the month of February, we received 259 new exam applications. Of that, 219 were approved in an average time frame of 7 days. And we did have 40 additional, or excuse me, we had 40 incomplete applications. For our establishment applications, we received 158. 108 of those were approved and 50 were incomplete with an average approval time frame of 11 days. For our reciprocity applications, we received 171. 82 of those were completed within an average time frame of 7 days, and 89 of those were incomplete. We are always, just as a reminder on this reciprocity category, we're always going to have a high number of incomplete simply because we're always waiting on state certifications from other states. And a side note, we received 20, I think it was, 20 some from the state of California yesterday, all at once, state certifications, which is basically a day's worth of licensing work. We'll continue to move forward on that. Very proud of that team. It's been a tough couple of months, and they continue to really knock it out of the park. From a customer care standpoint, our call center received 2,622 calls in the month of February, with an average wait time of 9 minutes and 56 seconds and an average handle time of 5 minutes and 22 seconds. For that total customer interaction time of 15 minutes and 18 seconds. Our goal here is 10 minutes. Since there is more than 50% deviation, we have marked this red. We know exactly why that is red right now. We were down. We typically have 3 customer service reps answering the phones, and we were down 1 for the entire month of February. I'm actually very excited, and I should have mentioned this during our staffing update. We did have a new contractor, Sharon, who's sitting in the back of the room next to Jessica, who began on Wednesday this week. So we should start to see those numbers correct this month. Our email inbox, we received 717 inquiries with an average response time of less than 36 hours. Our goal here is 24 business hours. We can achieve that when it's less than 500 emails. We cannot achieve it when it's over 500 from a capacity standpoint. I also want to mention some of the distinct difference between January and February, which were 2 very heavy months of phone calls for us. Our average daily call volume for the month of February was 138 calls that were actually taken. That actually represents a 3% increase over the month of January. So just another piece that shows why we are where we're at there. And additionally, I want to stop here for a moment, and I want to make a public statement regarding a trend that we are beginning to see in our licensee customers being more and more aggressive towards members of our team. We are seeing verbal harassment and abuse and foul language. And I want to make it very clear to our board, I want to make it very clear to the public, those listening virtually, that this will not be tolerated, period. And I have given the okay to my team, to our team, that they can politely end that call and notate the licensee profile of the behavior. And then I will personally handle those calls and explain to those individuals that it is not appropriate and that it will not be tolerated. In a couple of recent instances, the callers have threatened to call the governor's office, typical. But when this does occur, and the caller has been abusive to my team, I personally contact the Ombudsman Citizens Aid Office to inform them
of what had just occurred. And they are now starting to notate, they're preemptively notating their files of these situations in case that that individual does ultimately come to them. So I did want to make that clear. Particularly the last 4 weeks started to get really bad. I personally had to end a call with the licensee by the time it got to me because of how aggressive and abusive they were being to me. I can put up with a lot. And it's just been really bad. And in that case, they were asking us to violate law and we can't.
What I was going to ask is that, so obviously completely understand and zero tolerance for a procedure like that. Is there a trend in what they're calling it now? Like there's not a specific thing. Like,
it's been all over the place. Right now we're actually a victim of our own success. And what I mean by that is we have done such a great job of transitioning the culture of the organization to be customer service focused that we have more people reaching out. We have more people calling us. We're getting more emails into our inbox. And because we have been responsive and continue to be responsive, there are now certain expectations that aren't ours being put on us. They want their license in one day. And it's like, it's not a one-day turnaround. We receive too many applications. You know, so it's that we've had anything where from demanding that we issue a license in a certain amount of time, 2 days, 4 days, when we tell them that's not the case. We actually have for a very lengthy period of time in the instructions for applications on our webpage tell people how long it takes. And they seem to admit that they submit incomplete applications, even though they attest that it's complete. One of them was an SOS situation, the Secretary of State office situation. And it just, they have unrealistic expectations of our team across the board.
I would say, Kelly Shepherd, Deputy Director, there is still some frustration with our GL transition and signing into their accounts. We completely understand that. Our team has done a great job of literally walking people through that process. And I think that's the other piece of why our time has gone up. We're spending the time to try to help them the best that we can. There are some things that are frustrating, but getting to the point of cussing at our team is not appropriate.
Yeah, I just was curious if there was a random thing in there that maybe is broken at some point or they just.
Arizona Management System.
Yeah. We're right there with.
Yeah.
Two figures you were. Yeah. I figured it was worth asking.
Absolutely. And fair question. For our compliance update for the month of February, we received 51 consumer complaints. 29% of those were within our jurisdiction and assigned to an investigator for an investigation. Additionally, we conducted 408 inspections in the month of February. I think that's probably close to one of our highest months of inspections. So my congratulations to that team. Continuing to march towards having every establishment inspected once every 2 years. Barber, Cosmo, Aesthetics, Nails, everything across the board. Making great progress toward that. Also, I'm still impressed that we're continuing to see a compliance rate within a satisfactory rate within those inspections of in that 80% range in the month of February. It happened to be 86%. And we conducted 16 investigations in the month of February. Additionally, we were in Douglas, Prescott Valley, Sedona, Flagstaff, Kingman, Lake Havasu, and Parker in the month of February. So continuing to also make sure we get outside of Maricopa and Pima counties.
Yeah, Goodman, wondering on those inspections, is there variability or do I, as the shop owner, think, oh, they came and inspected me last month, they won't be back for years? Or is there a chance you could inspect me in January and then maybe you're back in June?
So we're trying to get an initial in this first 2 years. We have a great question, Mr. Chair, Member Goodman. We are trying to get through this. There are a lot of establishments that haven't been inspected since 16, 17.
Okay.
We're trying to get through everybody once in these 2 years. We do have some instances if we receive a complaint where we are backed out. So it's not a perfect yet, but there is going to, as we continue down this path, if we're successful in our budget appropriations, we'll be expanding the team. And I do think we can start to shrink the 2-year mark and start really looking at what that looks like, but for now.
Trying to hit everybody.
Trying to hit everybody.
Okay.
Do we still use the scale that somebody's had complaints that we go there more often and that sort of?
There is a risk-based policy, yes. I have some really good news about rulemaking, folks. We did it. We did it. Obviously in the fall, the board approved the rules. We did the notice of proposed rulemaking. We had the public comment period. We had oral proceedings. We had the notice of final rules. We got the governor's office approval on January 24th, and it was assigned to GERC. They actually moved us up. We shouldn't have been on the agenda until March, but we were very appreciative of GERC placing it earlier because there are a number of regulations that we needed, i.e. eyelash extension registration that we needed in place before we could launch the program. So they moved that up. So on February 27th, we had the GERC study session. That's the preliminary meeting where you meet with the GERC. And they were 99.8% happy with the rules package. They had issue with one line that was brought to their attention by the Institute for Justice. And it was regarding grandfathering, and there has been a lot of confusion in the way the legislature wrote that piece of the legislation last year. And so we were a bit blindsided because it was not something that we had heard through all of our public meetings and all of those things until it came up in GERC study session. Long story short, we got it together. We were able to adjust the language that made everybody happy on that grandfathering clause, and provided the information to the GERC council. And then they met on the following Tuesday, March 5th, and granted our approval. So we officially have Governor's Regulatory Review Council approval, stamp of approval on our rules package. And they will go, it's been now provided to the Secretary of State's office. And those rules go into effect on Saturday, May 4th. So we're very, very excited. I do need to stop here right now and give public appreciation to Deputy Director Shepherd, who really spearheaded that project for our organization over the last 9 months and worked very diligently and very, very hard to get that across the finish line. So my appreciation to Ms. Shepherd.
Can we get a copy of the final version?
We will, yeah. Yep.
Getting used to it because we'll probably get you.
Yes. And then we've got communications plans for the industry and all things around it. You're actually going to start seeing a lot of communications come out of this organization over the next 2 months.
And if I may, real quick, one of the barriers we had to establishment licensing that we've talked about was the trade name through the Secretary of State. Great business practice. You want to protect your brand name, your business name, not something that we needed to regulate. That will now be gone. Starting May 4th, so we will be able to get those establishment licenses through very quickly, I think.
Yes.
It's a huge win.
As a matter of fact, all of the incompletes on a couple slides ago for the establishment licenses are because of the Secretary of State thing. Even though we've asked people not to apply until they have that. And it's even the first question on the application.
It's okay, it's gonna be gone.
Be gone. May 4th. Also, at that same time, the eyelash technician registration program will launch. Really, Monday the 6th, if I'm not going to make the teamwork on the weekend. Maybe. next up, legislative update. It has been a heck of a week on legislation. House Bill 2169 is the barbering cosmetology massage therapy consolidation bill. That bill did pass out of the House. At the end of February, it has now had its first and second read in the Senate. It was assigned to Finance and Commerce and was on the agenda for Monday. And last night, when I was just doing my end of day check on legislative stuff, it has now been stricken from the agenda on Monday. So I'm not sure what that means yet. I'm told, though, nothing is dead until session is dead. So we don't really know. I have gotten no I've not been able to invest, like, okay, what's going on? Where is this going? Et cetera, et cetera. So we are continuing to keep a very, very close eye on that, obviously, because that would have a significant impact on us. We've kind of started building, not on paper, but on my whiteboard in my office, kind of started building a plan if this does come our direction. As a friendly reminder, the bill does have a delayed effective date of July 1 of 2025. So we would have a one full year of transition. And I wanted to publicly state, we don't have, obviously the board's not taking a stand on this, staff's not taking a stand on this, but what we are committed to is if this does come our direction, that we do see to it success. And which is why we are kind of starting to, at least on a whiteboard, start putting together what this looks like for us. What does this look like for the compliance team? What does this look like for the licensing team? What does this look like for our customer care team? What additional supports do we need? Do we need to start looking at an increased appropriation for that side of the house to expand that? So we're really starting to process around that. We're taking initial reviews of their statute and rule, and really starting to look at what that means for us. House Bill 2168, our BCB legislative request that you all approved in November. Boy, this has been going great until Wednesday. Our bill passed out of the House in February. Crossed the courtyard to the Senate in early March. It had its first read, its second read. It was assigned to the Senate Government Committee on Wednesday and was heard on Wednesday morning this week. I received a call at about 4:30, 4:45 on Tuesday afternoon that there was an amendment being offered on our very non-political bill to add some things that are politically charged. And a number of folks on that committee didn't like this proposed one line, 14 words change. And ultimately it did fail in committee on Wednesday, but was made very clear in that failure that it would be reheard. So it was basically held. But because they had already started the vote, they had to finish the vote kind of situation. Good news, when I checked this morning when I did my morning review, it has been placed on agenda for next Wednesday morning to be reheard. So I will be back.
Without the amendment? Or
it hasn't gotten that far yet. First step is getting it back on agenda. And so if you want to search, you can see what that existing agenda is. So that's that. We're continuing to push, talk to Representative Dunn and his policy advisor on this, and really trying to get this moved forward. The only other bill that we've been tracking this year was House Bill 2051, the cosmetology required instructions hours. It was actually never heard in its original chamber. So technically it should not move at this point. But again, no bill is dead until the legislative session ends. So we'll continue just to make sure it doesn't somehow to track it to see if it gets attached to anything else as the legislative session moves on. Wrapping up, here are our next six meetings, April through September. I also want to bring to the board's attention, we did, as discussed in February, we did move up the December meeting to December 13th, 2024 at 9 a.m. We did that because the following Friday was literally, I think, 3 days before Christmas. The Christmas holiday. So we did move that up a week with the board's agreement last month. We were able to secure a room. We were able to do everything we needed. I do think we sent the updated calendar invite for those of you that use the calendar invites, but those of you that don't, please mark your personal calendars for December 13th. With that, I am done.
Well, that's a lot. A lot of progress. All right, so then as we move forward and we come to the board training, are we in the board training business?
We are in the board training business. Good morning. My name is Jean Galvin. I'm an assistant attorney general assigned to your board. I've been asked to provide training on adjudicating revolving complaints. There is a, there we go. I'll just move to this and just, I hope it'll be helpful for the seasoned board members as well as any new board members. Just a reminder that when you are resolving complaints, just about like everything else that you do, adjudicating complaints is subject to the open meeting law. And we have to follow those requirements when placing agenda items or placing investigations on the agenda. One of the things that is very important when you begin to adjudicate a complaint and review a complaint is that you understand what constitutes unprofessional conduct. It's a little unique here because you regulate two different professions. And so you have to keep in mind what constitutes unprofessional conduct for each of those professions. With respect to barbering, the next, this slide and the next will reorientate you to what constitutes unprofessional conduct. And that is continued performance of barbering with an infectious or communicable disease, malpractice or incompetency, false advertising or making deceptive statements, advertising, practicing, or attempting to practice under a trade name other than the one in which a license is issued. But that'll be apparently going away. Violating a board statute or rule, making false statements to the board that could be part of the application, or if they're appearing in front of you, or a false statement in a written response to you that constitutes unprofessional conduct. Of course, operating a school without a license, or practicing without a license, allowing someone to practice in your establishment without a license is also unprofessional conduct. And of course, holding yourself out as a bar without holding the appropriate license from the board. With respect to cosmetology, what constitutes unprofessional conduct? Again, if you're performing cosmetology with an infectious or communicable disease, malpractice, conviction of a crime, false advertising or deception in advertising, failure to comply with the board order or board issue subpoena. This is also, I think, a very important. More on conviction of a crime. That is just what the statute says, is a conviction of a crime. Typically, you look at felonies, that in some instances that could be an absolute bar. You could look to misdemeanors and its relationship to the practice of the profession, or if it's a misdemeanor involving moral turpitude. It is not further defined in the cosmetology statutes about what type of crimes would be a bar or would subject the licensee to disciplinary action. So you would want to take each case on its own merit, look at maybe the connection that is involved with the practice of the profession, whether that's something the conviction would reflect poorly on the profession that the individual had a conviction. You want to consider the seriousness of the offense. Again, whether felony misdemeanor, does it involve an assault, crimes against children, violent crimes. There's not a lot of statutory guidance that is provided. And I don't have enough kids with the board to know, but your actions in the past and what sort of criminal convictions you have taken disciplinary action against.
So Deputy Director Shepherd, if I may, a conviction of a crime doesn't necessarily preclude somebody from holding a license. It would come before the board to Ms. Galvin's point to decide if it's related to the profession and would be something that would put the public in danger. So health and safety. So it's just a provision in the statutes that if there's a conviction of a crime, for the board to decide about licensing that individual.
Okay, but it would have to come to the board.
Correct.
Someone who gets both of a conviction on their application. There's also a statute that requires within 10 days of being charged with an offense
that may impact the individual practice of the profession they are required to disclose that to the board. But those types of disclosures would come before the board, for the board to exercise its discretion in deciding whether to open a complaint or deny the license. You know, case by case basis. Okay, great. Continuing with the conducts that violate or constitute unprofessional conduct and cosmetology, repeated failure to correct infractions of safety and sanitary requirements. We see those violations in the report from the compliance officer when they go out and they conduct investigations. They find that this establishment has, you know, repeated violations in this area that constitutes unprofessional conduct. Again, with cosmetology, the verbal statements or written statements to the board that are false. And allowing an employee under the supervision to perform cosmetology without a license, providing services to a person having a visible disease or communicable disease, operating school without a salon, again, failure to comply, and teaching cosmetology without holding an instructor's license. So not only should you understand what constitutes unprofessional conduct in order to adjudicate a complaint, but you should also understand and realize where in the process we are with respect to a complaint, so you understand your options when you have that complaint come before you. So understand what constitutes unprofessional conduct and then say, okay, where are we in the process? Are we in this investigative review or complaint review process? Are we at the informal interview process or are we at the formal hearing process? Because each one of those stages vary in the options that you have at that time, and it will also implicate the respondent, level of due process and what they are in. So with respect to the investigative review or a complaint review for barbering, this is dictated by 32.354, and your options are to dismiss if you find that there are no violations of your statute or your rule. You can file a letter of concern if you find that there's insufficient evidence to impose direct action or some type of disciplinary action against the person. So that's telling the respondent that, hey, we're not thrilled with the practice that you've engaged in. And we don't think it rises to the level of discipline, but you need to kind of, get your house in order, get your, practice in order. And we're going to memorialize this exchange with a letter of concern. If you believe that there is possibly disciplinary action that's warranted, conduct that is cause for concern, then you can move it to an informal interview. During the investigative process, you can also offer a consent agreement. If you think that a civil penalty is warranted or maybe some disciplinary education, you can offer a consent agreement with terms, and you can always offer a consent agreement at any time during the process. If the respondent wants to forego, the informal process or formal process, and just says, I admit it, I engage in unprofessional conduct, let's settle this, you always have the authority to enter into a consent agreement. You also have the authority to move the matter to a summary suspension. And that's a quite serious remedy that is available to you. And that is when you believe that the public health, safety, or welfare is in jeopardy and that it requires emergency action. And that would be as a result of a meeting, evidence was presented, your investigators present documentary evidence, maybe photographic evidence, testimony of a serious infraction or infraction, and you've decided this can't go on another day because the public is at risk. You would then vote to summarily suspend that license or that permit, and then we would go to formal hearing to uphold to ask an ALJ or the board to uphold the summary suspension. So that is a severe and a very important remedy that you have available to you, but it is available to you when the circumstances are warranted. After this investigative complaint review for barbering, you have the informal interview option. Again, you can
maybe you go to an informal interview because you thought that suggested that there was some violation that warranted disciplinary action, but you get there, you hear from the other side, you look at all the evidence, and you say, well, there is no violation here. You can still dismiss. You could file that letter of concern. Again, offer consent agreement. At this level, you can also include probation with terms that would include restitution. Again, as always, summary detention is available to you. Or if you get to this informal interview stage and you say, this is bad and this type of conduct needs to be addressed, then I think it is deserving of a revocation or a suspension or a civil penalty, then you move it to formal hearings. And that's after an informal interview. Very similarly, cosmetology has an investigative review, a complaint review process, and that's found in 32573. The options are the same at that stage, whether it's dismiss, file a letter of concern, offer consent agreement. Again, summary detention is available. Cosmetology has similar options at the informal interview stage process, but we've escalated it from a complaint review or an informal review of the complaint documentation. We've gone to the informal stage with cosmetology, and they also have the same option, whether concern, consent agreement, probation, or again referring to criminal hearing. With respect to formal hearing, and this is true with both barbering and cosmetology, you have all of the disciplinary options available to you after a formal hearing that you would have you know, previously, whether it's revocation, suspension, a public reproof, which is a censure. You can also dismiss. Maybe you get to a formal hearing and maybe the other side presents evidence that shows you that there was no violation. Obviously, after formal hearing, you can also find that there was no violation and dismiss the matter. A formal hearing, my understanding with your board is that the hearings are typically held before the board. Is that correct?
So there's not been one in years.
Okay. Okay.
So I can answer the question.
Okay, formal hearing?
Yeah.
We've done one.
We've done.
We've done a few.
Pretty one.
But it's so does motion to deem call into that or no?
You can file a motion to deem.
Right.
The state would file a motion to deem. A motion to deem comes into play when you file a complaint and notice of hearing, and the respondent does not file an answer. I'm assuming within 20 days, then you can file a motion to deem that basically asks the board to accept the allegations as true, to find that there were violations and impose discipline without going through the formal hearing process because the respondent is not playing, is not reading. So my understanding is when there have been formal hearings, they've been held before the board, but you also have the option to go to the Office of Administrative Hearing. If that is a more significant hearing that is involved, that could take, you know, several hours or maybe, you know, several days, then we would go to the Office of Administrative Hearing. Typically, I think things can be handled, you know, at the board level. Once the matter is moved to formal hearing, myself, the AAG becomes what is, you know, akin to a prosecutor. I am no longer advising the board. So you as the staff and the board will be assigned a new attorney from our office, an independent advisor, who her job is to provide independent advice to all the boards where the regular AAG no longer becomes the advisor, but becomes the prosecutor. So that is something that we may experience if we go to formal hearing. Rules of evidence that apply, you will be provided with a script on how to kind of manage the formal hearing because it is a little bit different. But the rules of evidence that apply, the witnesses are sworn, exhibits are offered, testimony is offered. I wanted to conclude with just giving you a couple little tidbits of kind of practice pointers when you are sitting as board members adjudicating complaints. This will help kind of frame your reference for those proceedings. And it also puts it on the running kind of effective board of board meetings. When you are adjudicating complaints, you should only consider the evidence that is before you. Everything that your investigators have provided to you, anything that the staff has provided to you, anything that the respondent has provided to you, you don't want to conduct research on your own.
If you conduct research on your own, you are gaining access to information and documentation that other board members don't have. And that puts that risks or jeopardizes the proceedings and the integrity of the proceedings, and you may have to recuse yourself. So if you are looking at a case and you think, I would really like to know X, Y, and Z, but I don't see it in the file, then reach out to staff, reach out to the executive director, let him know what you think is missing. Ask him to obtain that information and disseminate it to all board members so they have it. Don't go research on your own and then bring it to the table and say, well, this is what I learned when I did my own research, because that jeopardizes the process, the integrity of the process. And then you would have to disqualify yourself, and we don't want to have to disqualify a board member who has a lot to offer and is important to the process. So save your research requests for staff and don't jeopardize your participation by conducting your own. In adjudicating complaints, you can obviously apply your own experience and education and training. That's why you have been appointed, regardless of whether you're a professional member or a public member. The governor's decided that you have something of value to contribute, and that's why you're here. So you are, as part of that appointment, asked and expected to contribute to the decision based on your own experience and training and education. As with every profession, whether it's barbering, cosmetology, you know, psychology, pharmacy, trends change in the profession. So it's important to keep up on those trends in your profession. When you are adjudicating complaints, like any other board, I would imagine, there are individuals and entities who appear before the board, perhaps on a regular basis, or, you know, you're aware that they have appeared before the board. You have to understand that any prior history that a respondent or an entity has should not be considered by you when adjudicating complaints until you determine that there is unprofessional conduct in this case. Because we don't want you to, you know, unintentionally become, you know, biased or prejudiced to say, oh, I know this outfit, and they've been here before, and we've imposed disciplines, so they must have conducted unprofessional conduct in this case. So you want to, you know, free your mind, don't go research to see if these people have been before. Staff will notify you once you have determined that there is a violation in this case, that yes, they do have prior disciplinary action on the record. You can take that into account when determining or deciding on a imposing discipline, what should be imposed. Then you can take into consideration your prior discipline. But we want to avoid any type of appearance of conflict by considering too early whether they have a history with the board. We don't want you know, the notion of prejudice sneaking in on our considerations. So generally, practice tips, stay focused. What are the allegations? What information do I need? Do I need more information than what's been presented? How do I assess the credibility of which? So who do I think was credible? Who do I think was truthful? And if the allegations are true, you know, what is the discipline that should be imposed? When we talk about what discipline should be imposed, consistency is so important. And I know every board struggles with that. The AAG will tell you that every case is different, the facts are different, they should be adjudicated on their own merits. And that is very true. But when you get cases with similar facts, similar violations, we do our best to resolve each case in a similar fashion so that there is consistency. So there's not allegations that it was arbitrary or capricious, or that you are abusing your discretion in imposing discipline. I know a matrix, some boards have developed a matrix.
so they can look at, while it's not, it's a guide as to when I have these violations and these happen, what can the board impose and what historically has the board imposed? And that is something that the board of view and do find out. So, you know, keep that in mind. Again, the running a good meeting is to stay focused, avoid drifting to other topics, because that helps running a really efficient and good meeting. And then just the last page of the specimen, the system looking for the chair. When you are considering complaints or just any other topic that comes before the board, everyone is participating. You want to give everybody an opportunity to say their piece, offer their input. And so it's helpful and it makes a clean record, especially if we are holding an informal or a formal hearing, that individuals don't talk over each other. You didn't do a great job identifying yourselves before you speak, which really is a great habit to be in and helps make a really clear record. So I would just keep that last page in mind for kind of general.
Thank you. Oh, appreciate the training. We can always use more. All right, so our next item up is connected to that. Review discussion about possible action updating consolidating the Barbering College Board parameters. So do we have information that you would like to share?
Yeah, it's good. Again, Mr. Chair, members of the board, by way of history, because I know we've had some absences of board members for like 2 months. In January, there was discussion about board parameters and trying to, if maybe the current makeup of the board wasn't keen on certain pieces of the board parameters that the prior board had created in 2019. Let's have that discussion. So we brought in at the February board meeting, we did bring a couple of items up. Then the board directed the staff to go back and review those items. Rosa volunteered to take on that project and worked with that, sought feedback from the compliance team, sought feedback obviously from Deputy Director Shepherd and myself. And so she is here this morning to present to you the new, obviously draft board parameters. Thank you. And I do believe everybody has a hard copy of that in front of them so that you can see that. And she's going to make that presentation to the board now. Thank you, Rosa.
I'm a member of the board. My name is Rosa Rodriguez, Compliance Administrator. A copy of the draft has been provided for your review. What I did was I used the current cosmetology board parameters for a guide and combined both Barber and Cosmo to be considered recommendations for the sanitation and licensing requirements. The items highlighted in yellow are the barbers, which are the ones that I added. But they should be consistent with the top of solitudes. Should you have any questions, I would be glad to answer.
And I think, Mr. Chair, members of the board, I think one of the things that we're trying to get to is consistency in issuance of civil penalties. And I don't mean to overstep, but I think over the last year, we've seen some inconsistency in the issuance of civil penalties dependent on which board members are at the table at any given meeting. And so ultimately, I think my desire, and I think the staff's desire, is that the board come to an agreement on what they would like to see consistently. Obviously, there's always cases where there might be some nuance or there might be some adjustment, but something that we can consistently issue those penalties on.
On the second page, at the bottom, there are a few things where on modified 10 days, non a barbarized 15 days, we're not consolidate those, make them the same.
Unfortunately, that's based on the statute.
So
and actually a great chair. Great question, Mr. Chair. I do believe in that bill that's currently in the Senate. We do adjust that so that they're consistent, but obviously, you know, if we get that successfully across the finish line in the Senate next week, it's still got to go to the floor. It's still got to go to the governor. And then it won't even take effect for 90 days until after the legislative session ends. So we're still 4 or 5, maybe even 6 months out from an effective date on that. So we would be coming back to you with an update to this document at that time to consolidate those items.
Okay, good. Yeah, the fewer differences, the better.
Agreed.